The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We have signed Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler is now part of the UFC.
You'd show up to a gym somewhere across the country. You're not sure who you're going to draw first round. You're not sure when you're going to wrestle. You're not sure what's going to go on. This is kind of embracing the uncertainty, and that's what I've done my entire career.
Heaven just dragged us right back down.
Oh, and there's a tap. Wow. I'm not sure what happened, Michael, but whatever it was, it ended quickly.
I know I got some ways to go. I keep telling him I got some ways to go, and he has little slick things to say, so when I see him, I see him.
Kevin Holland, ladies and gentlemen.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I are here coming off the heels of a great fight for Uriah Hall. We have very shortly coming up, we have Kevin Holland, who won an incredible first round verbal submission. A very, very scary moment in that fight for Kevin over Charlie Ontiveros, where it was it looked like he really got hurt, but I think he said he hurt something in his neck pop. And also Michael Chandler, who's in the UFC now. He's not fought in the UFC. Great Bellator lightweight champion, former champion. Beat Eddie Alvarez for the belt. And I'm really looking forward to watching this guy fight in the UFC. I hope he has information on somebody who he may be gunning for. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I'm happy to talk to Michael Chandler because I know Michael. He stopped by my school before.
Oh, okay.
He was training with Alan M. And he's a really nice guy, really great guy. He's a dynamic fighter and he's a fantastic fighter. He's a great addition. You know, because he can
agree.
I love, there's some scrambles on his Instagram or where he gets into scrambles where guys are almost putting him down. And then he's like backflipping and single legging and going between their legs. And he's got some of the best scrambles I've ever seen. You know what I mean? I really enjoy that. I'm happy. He's a great addition. But Kevin Holland, I just got done watching his fight again.
Yeah.
And he's so comfortable in
there. He is.
You know what I mean? And he's really a dangerous, dangerous fighter in a sense where he's got that, he's one of those like triple threats where he's got the striking where he could put your lights out. Like, look what he did to Joaquin Buckley.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I know that he took that on short notice and whatnot. I'm just saying, he's a great striker. His timing on his takedowns is very, it's unique. He's not like straight up shooting for doubles and singles. He's striking and boom, he's getting in on some double underhooks and he's creative. Yeah. And again, and obviously his jiu-jitsu is phenomenal. I couldn't get over when he was fighting I'll tell you who did he just fight against?
Charlie Ontiveros.
Charlie, right?
Yeah.
Charlie's hair was throwing me for a loop a little.
Yeah, it was unique. They had to look in Canada. That's like a Montreal look.
This is sound like, you know, both of us, bald gentlemen. Oh, you know, it looks like we're being haters because of his frosted hair.
That's right.
But we're not. I just thought it was very, it's not distracting, but it reminded me of like, I'm not hating on him, but it reminded me of like a, I couldn't stop thinking of an in shape, like Sideshow Bob from like The Simpsons, like the one who's, you see the hair? I'm not a Simpsons guy. I think that's what his name is. I gotta see a cartoon of that guy because I think he has the hair like that.
I felt bad for him. He was crying coming in the ring. He was very emotional. I guess it's a big moment. He got the fight on very short notice, flew out, tested, cut weight and was ready to go. Like, he came really, really short notice. It was a dream come true for this guy. And he was emotional coming into the cage. And then you see him, like, look, you're going to lose fights. But when you see him, I mean, look, thank God it wasn't worse.
Leaving on a stretcher, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, man. And having to verbally tap. But I mean, look, your neck is.
What was it? Well, I'm sorry to cut you off. What was it? What happened?
It looks like he popped something. He felt like his neck popped. And the way he got slammed, I mean, Kevin might have a better insight into it. But I'm going to guess he just took a tremendous jolt to the neck. And it might not have been as bad as he thought. But I mean, he obviously felt something to verbally tap like that in his first fight. I mean, it must have been very, very painful or scary.
You know who's ready for us?
The man who has a better explanation than I do.
Let's ask him what he felt. Congratulations on that fight, bro.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
That was awesome. Now, wait. Now, who were you originally slated to fight before Charlie took the fight?
I think his name was like Mahmud or something like that.
Oh, you didn't know? Oh, wait. You didn't know who you were fighting?
I think his name was Mahmud. Send me the information. I was like, all right, good. We take whatever.
You don't care. You don't care about the names?
Not really. I mean, just take it, Care more about how they fight. I see the style and I'm like, all right, cool. That's what's up. We'll take it.
And this fight with Ontiveros ended. I mean, did you know when you slam it? Obviously, he's okay, which is good news. It's always scary when it's the neck because, that can be a really bad situation. Did you know what it was when it happened? Did you hear him? What happened? What were you thinking when this happened?
Yeah. So when it happened, he was like, when I slammed him, he was like, my neck. So there's nothing wrong with the guy. The guy's fine. He's up taking selfies after the fight.
Let me ask you something, Kevin, as a guy that used to fight, I was very like anal about like peaking at the right time for a fight. Like, yo, man, I'm getting my camp here. Hard sparring's here. I should be feeling a little shitty here, but then I come back and I feel great the week of the fight. But when you're fighting like four times in how long was that? Since you're fighting like almost every other weekend, what's your mindset as far as you're not peaking, you're just in shape to fight all the time and you're mentally there all the time? Explain it to me because I want to know because I didn't have that.
I'm the Kung Fu man. My self-defense is always ready.
That's what it is.
My self-defense is always ready.
I would love to see some of your earlier fights and see how you were. How at home were you early on? Because you're very, as far as in the fight itself, like, because you're very at home in there. You're not, if there's nerves, you're not showing it. You have the presence of mind during a fight when somebody goes, ooh, when the champion, Israel Adesanya, I believe, went, oh, after a strike, and you were like waving to him like, that was nothing, like, or something like that. That is a certain type of individual. There's guys that are scared to death going in there. And it looks like you're just having a party.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a cage party. You know what I mean? It was a cage party on Halloween. That's why I signed up for it. It was a good time. I mean, I was comfortable back in the day. I'm comfortable now. I'm more and more comfortable in the UFC octagon now that I've been in there a lot more. Nothing like getting used to your job, right? Every office is different. It was a different office. Now that I'm used to the office, I'm loving it even more. I've always been pretty comfortable fighting. It's probably just as comfortable fighting as I am sleeping, or playing a video game. Other than that, everything else is pretty much like a little bit hard. There's no rule books or there's nothing set way on how to do it, but fighting.
Well, weren't you, it was fun to watch you and Joaquin Buckley. Like, weren't you like encouraging him or kind of coaching him, telling him like things will be better? And like, you were saying things that would really bother me as an opponent.
He's Mijo. I call him Mijo. He messaged me every once in a while, has little things to say, trying to be slick. I call him Mijo, I feel like I taught my son a lot. He's, my son gets mad when I call that guy son, but Mijo, that's what I call him. I call him Mijo. Proud of Mijo.
What do you think of the division now? Because now Dana's saying that Adesanya is going to fight Blachowicz up at light heavyweight, which there's a lot of middleweights. I'd rather see him fight, honestly, the Whitaker rematch and a few other ones. But as you're working your way up, I mean, what do you think is next for you? And what do you think happens for the next 6 months if he's off getting ready for Jan Blachowicz?
I think if he's off for the next 6 months, he has what? I think 8 or 9 fight win at in the UFC at middleweight, right? So that means he's on the longest win streak at middleweight in the UFC. So the last guy was going to fight before this guy replaced had a 13 fight win streak. So that'd have been fun. Man, I think I go fight in November. I think I go fight in December. I think I go try and fight, you know, somewhere in January, somewhere in February. And then by the time March comes around, I'm pretty much up there with his win streak. And, you know, the little laughing and the little jokes that he does and the little mind games that he plays, you know, we'll figure out how they work out.
You want to chew up a little bit of ground and get kind of build up a little bit while he's getting ready for this fight. You want to, you know, in the rankings, move up a little bit.
Just stay on a run. Just stay on a run. If he's going somewhere else to take care of business, then, you know, let me scratch the people that, you know, that he doesn't feel like scratching right now. Look, if he doesn't want to do a Robert Whittaker rematch, then I will just work my ass off until March and I'll do it for him. Simple.
What exactly happened, right? I mean, for the people that don't know, right after your victory, you had some words with the champ, with Israel Adesanya. And I heard the end of it, but they didn't have the cameras on you the whole time. What was that? What was that about?
You know, something happened in LA. You know, I had already did that story, you know, but, you know, it was just, that's not it. You know, I'm not the guy you can play with. In the cage, you know, when the dude landed the head kick, little anime, I was like, all right. So I just called him boy. You know, I just kept calling him boy. You know, I just let him know, you know, why are you, you know, I walked up to you at the hotel lobby. You shake your, you put your hand out. You're like, hey, Mr. Holland, I'm not even top 20, not top 5, not top 15. I'm not ranked. Why do you know who I am? Why are you worried about who I am? You know, it's like, so for you to put your hand out, shake me as I'm walking you down like that, and then to say I didn't do anything at the hotel lobby, cool. You know, it's just, it's a little bit, it's little things playing here and there. And I know Staubinder likes the mind games, and that's perfectly fine. I'm just not the one to play with.
Do you see yourself getting a ranked opponent next? I mean, it's obviously 4 fights in the last few months.
Yeah, I'll take a ranked opponent because that's what it takes to get to the guys that I want to smack. You know, it's like the guys I want to smack are good fighters. So I got to go smack other good fighters to get to these good fighters. And then I'll smack them, you know. This ain't the 70s. You can't run around shooting people, you know. So you got to beat them up. So
that's right. Who do you realistically see? I mean, obviously, Whittaker would be a great one, of course. But realistically, who do
that's
you see?
Down the line. That's, sure. That's down the line. Yeah. I don't want you guys to ever think I'm talking about tomorrow. You know what right. I mean? If it was tomorrow, it's whoever the company wants me to fight tomorrow. Every time I go out, it's whoever the company wants me to fight. I'm down. I'm not picking names.
But the way things, whoever they want, the way things go in the UFC, right? I mean, he's already fought. He's fought Whittaker. He's fought Costa. I mean, there probably will be a rematch down the road. You know, a Cannonier, I mean, maybe, but he lost. So I don't see Cannonier being up next.
What did you think of Uriah Hall versus Anderson Silva? Did you watch that fight?
Yeah, I watched it. We were in the limo about to go get a steak, and I watched it.
Yeah. What thoughts on that?
I've always thought Uriah is a phenomenal striker when he wants to be. He can counter strike. He can offensive strike. He can do whatever he wants to do when it comes to striking, when he wants to. And when he does land that money shot, we've all seen time and time again.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't take that money shot. You know, a lot of people can't take that money shot.
Yeah.
And I got respect for Uriah because he's over there with Safe. And, you know, it's like I fought those guys a lot on local level. So I got a lot of respect for those guys, you know.
And you're right. It's funny you say when he wants to, because I was watching. We love Uriah. And I was watching and I'm like, you got to be careful with Anderson Silva. Obviously, he's Anderson Silva. But I felt like he was being more cautious than he needed to be. And I'm like, is he just being overly respectful, or is it a little harder for him to pull the trigger, or has he put too much awe in Anderson Silva, or did he not want to hurt him immediately? I couldn't tell what Uriah was thinking. I would love to ask him what he was feeling at that moment.
I think if you ask him, I think he'd probably say a combination, a little bit of everything, you know, combination of everything. It is Anderson Silva. You do have to protect yourself, you know. I think at the end of the day, that is a guy who's done a lot of things in the division, a lot of things in the sport. So you are at awe. And then on top of that, you know, you probably do beef yourself up before you go fight that man. Like, look who I'm fighting, you know. So it's a tough situation. Anytime you go out there and fight somebody that you've always looked at on TV or you always looked up to, it's a tough situation, you know.
Yeah, I thought Dana was kind of brutal on him, to be honest.
On who?
I thought Dana, you know, I love Dana, and Dana's honest as shit. And he's kind of, you know, he's calling him the most gun-shy fighter and whatnot. I'm not talking about prior fights, but I'm talking about this last fight with Anderson Silva. He actually gave a stat of how many punches he threw in a certain round, maybe the third round or second. I forget, but it wasn't a lot. You know who did throw a lot of punches versus him? Forrest Griffin. How the fuck did that turn out?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not being an asshole. I was there live for that shit, Holland.
Yeah, I was there live for that one, too. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
You know.
Where was that? Chicago? Where was
Philadelphia,
that?
I think.
It's not the same. It's not the same silver, though.
Listen, I understand that was a decade ago. Yeah. I understand that. But you're dealing with a guy that, you know, you've seen him arguably be one of the, you know, slip or make you miss and, you know, Counter-Striker. Best, maybe the best Counter-Striker ever. He'll make, who does the rope-a-dope like him up against a cage? Yeah, Stephen Bonner.
Nobody. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I do think Anderson Silva's a phenomenal fighter. But at the end of the day, you know, he beat my coach, so I'm not going to just give him too much awe and too much praise, you know. And at the end of the day, Chris Weidman did knock him out with a back fist pretty much.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, he has phenomenal defense. He's a phenomenal fighter. He has what I call the dragon's eye. He has the dragon's eye, and he has the dragon's eye probably better than anybody who's ever graced the octagon. And that's phenomenal. But you still got to go out there and fight the fight. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to go out there and fight the fight. He's a phenomenal counter striker, but he's not the best boxer in the world.
Weidman seems like the one guy who's fought Anderson, who he obviously respected him, but he seemed like he was the only guy that walked in there and goes, I'm going to fucking kick the shit out of this guy. Like, yeah. Everyone else has such a love for him. And I think that can be, it's understandable, but it's hard. And I think Uriah was just, I literally think, because he gets very in his head that he literally loves this guy, and it was hard for him to, because I think he knows he's going to really hurt him. And I think for Uriah, there was a little bit of, I don't want to hurt him. Like, I also felt that way when Cormier fought him, and people told me I was wrong, and everyone tells me I'm crazy. But I thought Cormier wasn't as hard as he could have been out of love for this guy.
I agree.
You bring up your coach, Travis Luter, great jiu-jitsu black belt, who was in the house with me on season 4. Fighting for the title, fighting Anderson Silva. He had, listen, Jimmy, if you haven't seen that fight, fucking laces out. It's one of those, this close, he mounted him.
Yeah.
You know, I feel, because when I see that, there's not a lot that reminds me of you and Travis as a fighter. But positionally, I'll tell you right now, Charlie was squirming all over the place. You were controlling like a mofo. You know how to, like, your positional training, that reminds me of Travis Luter. That's what I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Because Travis is a beast of control. He gets side control, he gets mount. He's improving his position. He's in the guard, he's passing the half, he's passing the side, he's mounting, he's taking the back.
Yeah, remember when I fought Thiago Santos?
When you fought Thiago Santos.
Yeah, when I fought Thiago Santos.
You lost that decision?
When I got on top and I had side control on that one too, you know, the round ended there as well. You know, it's like, you train underneath Travis Luter, you learn how to side control people.
Yeah, no, he's got great pressure. So I wanted to definitely give him some shine for that.
The dude's an elephant. He's an elephant when he's on top of you.
He probably still is. He's still rolling, huh? He's still rolling.
I can tap pretty much anybody that I train with consistently. Yeah. I can tap them out consistently. Except for Travis, dude. It's like, I'm a computer. I can download some data on people and I can, you know, start pulling off some pretty cool things. Travis, though.
And he's methodical. He'll get a position and just, it's great. I love that. Old school tightness.
It's rough. It's real life chess. It's real life chess. It's fun.
Here's what I want to see as guys who loves matchups. I want to see, now I don't know if Marvin Vettori has anybody lined up. I'm going also with personality. I would love to see you and Vettori or Brunson, I think also, and that's a little higher up in the rankings for you, is a fight I would love to see you against Derek Brunson. But Marvin Vettori, I would really enjoy seeing.
That would be phenomenal.
Two fights I want for personal reasons, so I like it.
Oh, Marvin? You're not a big fan of Marvin?
Yeah, Marvin. Me and Marvin had a nice conversation in Florida, and then he went upstairs and made a tweet about me. I mean, made an Instagram post and a tweet about me. And things like that just don't sit right with me. Don't have a man-to-man conversation and then go upstairs and do some weird stuff like that. That's not manly.
Making like you're playing nice or something? What, that kind of thing?
I'm always playing nice. Always playing nice. Until you put me in a position where I don't need to play nice no more, I'm always playing nice. I'm always going to be respectful. Look, I don't want to get kicked out of the business because I'm some hoodlum going crazy. I don't want to get kicked out. You know?
You get to exercise your demons every other week right now, the way you're fighting. So this will keep you sane. I love it. I love it, Jimmy.
Exactly.
How about this? Now, this is, okay, Darren Till, Kevin Holland. That fight is another great fight that I would like to see. Darren Till. And, you know, Till's number 6. So, but you're a big enough name now where people love watching you fight. And that's what happens sometimes. A guy comes up and isn't as highly ranked, but it's still considered a big fight for a guy.
What did Till say? What did Till say? He said numbers don't matter. And he said rankings don't matter in this game no more, you know? But my name ain't that big, so
it's
we'll keep working. We'll keep working. We'll keep working. Whoever they want me to fight, like I always say, whoever they want me to fight, I'm there. And then, you know, people always say, hey, you're not fighting this guy. You're not fighting that guy. Look, I show up on 2 weeks' notice to fight somebody. And then within a week of that, they decide they don't want to fight no more. And then I got to fight somebody else. Whether they're passing out, you know, right before the fight, whether they're catching COVID, whether they're catching cramps, you know, whether they're tearing their vaginal muscles. I don't know. You know what I mean? But things are happening. And then I'm always getting last second fights. And I'm down for it. I like it. I'm always ready to scrap.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Listen. I would love the – I like the Marvin Vettori fight. Yeah. I like all these fights. Listen, you're a very entertaining guy. More fights of Kevin Holland, the better, Trailblazer.
Thank you.
Jimmy, I'm not alone in this.
No, you're not. And you're entertaining even – again, and we just because Dana, when you're saying that he kind of might have been harsh on Uriah, Dana's looking at it from a different point of view too. Like Dana's coming out of like – all right, for guys who are not UFC fans that are watching this, what are they watching? A guy not throwing – you know, he's – Dana's – looking at like what's happening for the business. So he may look at a guy like you who is very entertaining and you're such a good talker in the cage and you fight well. So you might get a jumped up faster than you think. At least I would hope you do. I'm babbling, by the way. I drink a lot of coffee. However, I'm just psyched to see whoever you're fighting next.
Man, I'm psyched to find out who I fight next too. But I'm down for whatever, man. Like I say, man, whatever the company wants me to do, I'm down for it. People always say, oh man, you're a yes boy. Well, this yes boy is getting paid and I enjoy it. So hey, whoever you want me to fight, let me know.
Besides fighting, for the people at home, what hobbies do you like to do? Whether it's reading, video games like myself, or like
I love it. It's video games like yourself. I still haven't got the virtual like you told me to get the virtual.
Listen,
I
want to tell you something.
That door is closed. I'm working on some stuff for Christmas. We got a really big Christmas. We fought so much this year. We have a great Christmas.
Oculus Quest 2. The Oculus Quest 2, Kevin. I want to scream right now, but I'm going to wake up. They're doing this school. Jimmy's looking out the window. I'm telling you right now, you can get it. I went to Best Buy. I got that thing right out of the box. You don't need a PC. You just sign on through Facebook or something so they know all your fucking life story. And I don't know what they do with that privacy shit. But it is so fucking awesome, dude. It's right out of – it's almost like Ready Player One. Just the goggles and the controllers. Jimmy, bear with me for 2 seconds.
I'm with you, man. I want you to be happy.
I like his kids. He wants to know about this. We're his kids. Listen to me. So good. So good. I have the Vive Pro. I haven't played, Jimmy, I haven't played that standout battle royale game that I'm ranked in. I haven't played that since I got the.
Yeah, very highly
number
ranked.
Number two, number three, or something like that?
Yep.
I was up to number four in the world. I didn't want to brag.
Yeah.
Jimmy, this is so. Listen, is this normal for a guy approaching 50?
Yes.
Hey, I hope I still am when I'm approaching. I hope I'm still trying to play my game.
Holy shit. Listen,
look, Kevin. When I can't fight no more, I can still play video games. And that's what I hope for.
Yeah.
So much fun. But I just wanted to give that a plug. All right. Anything else you want to pull? You want to plug anything, Kevin?
Man, you know,
Where's Travis Luter's school?
Look.
Where's that school?
I couldn't do something for a whole week because we were at the fight. Week and a half. I'm back. I can do it again. Look, I'm feeling good.
So you're ready before the end of the year if they want you. If they want you for
twice.
December. I mean,
twice if I...
Right.
You took no damage in this last fight. No damage whatsoever. So, yeah.
I got kicked in the head. I got kicked hard enough for Staubinder to laugh at me.
All right. So, you might have taken a little damage. All right. You know what? Let me correct that. I wasn't kicked in the head, so I can't say no damage. But you seem like you're ready to go.
Yeah, man. If my buddy wasn't getting married this weekend, I'd take it this weekend. If I wasn't a part of, speaking at Jim Ross's mayor campaign on the 12th for Arlington, Texas, then I would be ready on the 12th. But after that, down to scratch.
I'll tell you, I don't remember. Did you take any damage in these last four fights? I mean, what was the worst that happened to you? Did you get cut?
Yeah, Darren Stewart. Hats off to Darren Stewart. You know what I mean? Gave me the toughest fight so far. So he made me sit down for a few weeks. But right when I got off that stool, I was good to go again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, man, listen, as long as you want to, stay busy.
Yeah.
We love to watch you, buddy.
Travis texted me this morning and said, two more times this year would be nice, Kevin. I said, okay, let's do it.
Travis is great. Oh, Travis, I said hello for sure.
For sure.
Excellent, man.
For sure. Take care, Kevin. Good talking to you.
Hey, congrats again.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate you guys, man. You guys have a good one. Enjoy your week.
Take care.
The hits literally keep on coming. From one MMA event to the next, they grow in excitement and anticipation. This weekend is no different, with two of the sport's most respected fighters stepping into the octagon this weekend. There's no better place to get in on all of the action than DraftKings, an official partner of the UFC. For this weekend's fight, DraftKings is offering new users a free shot at $1,000 in total prizes. Now, if you haven't tried it yet, fantasy MMA, it's easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a free shot at thousands of dollars in total prizes. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, making it easy to deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion since 2012. That's $7 billion. So they know a thing or two about a big payday. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code UNFILTERED to get a free shot at thousands of dollars in total prizes for this weekend's contest. That's promo code UNFILTERED to get a free shot at thousands of dollars with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Always entertaining, Jimmy.
I mean, he really is. Guys, I was thinking of Sean O'Malley.
Oh, Sean O'Malley.
But I'm saying he's an example of a guy who's like 11-0, looks great, and is getting a bigger name because of the way he fights. He's moving up because of, before he's even ranked, he's already a name fight. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what's going to happen with Kevin Holland.
He's threatening. He looks great. He's such an entertaining fighter. And to have, like I said, to have that presence of mind during the fight to make a reference outside, like, nothing there. When guys usually say nothing hurt me or something, it usually hurts them. That wasn't the case in this case.
Yeah.
This was, he knew who said it.
Yep.
He heard it and had the presence of the mind to be like, I don't think so. Don't get excited. That's basically what he was saying. Well, that is awesome. When I was fighting Caro Parisian back in the day, and I got tired in that fight, and I don't normally get that tired, and I got tired by the end of the first round, I was pretty tired in that one, you know, because I almost laid him out, the adrenaline went up, tried to finish him, didn't work, but I remember during it, Longo, at one point, maybe the second round or something, Ray Longo's yelling, he's getting tired or something, and Caro like flipped him off, like he gave him, like he put his hand down, like flipped him off. And I remember just being like, yeah, I'm in for a fucking long knife. You know what I mean?
That guy's a problem.
I'm getting tired, and this motherfucker's got the presence of mind to flip up my coach. Fucking, I wish I had more juice. I could just attack him even harder right now. That motherfucker. I'm like, fuck. So listen, thank God I had some escape, so I didn't have to say uncle to that guy.
By the way, we should maybe just touch on our picks real quick.
Imagine so cool. You think you did good?
I don't know. I don't remember who I picked. I mean, a part of me tells me I did a masterful job this week. I don't remember.
You're acting very cocky.
No.
All right, let's go over them.
Sure. We both got Bobby Green wrong.
Bobby Green, this is the thing. I felt it's kind of like we were talking about with Kevin Holland, where he's kind of relaxed in there. It's not bothering him. But the difference was he wasn't doing enough to win the round. So this other guy might not even look nearly as comfortable as Bobby. Might not have really been hurting Bobby, but didn't lay off him. He kept the course. And Bobby kind of was going, I'm not going to say go through the motions, but didn't really get a great rhythm of, he didn't find his home for things. You know, he wasn't landing cleanly. And then when he was getting hit, I don't know, the counters were off. He was a little off, you know? But I mean, that's not to say that Thiago, wasn't on the ball, you know? So, all right. So we both picked him wrong, but good job to Thiago, because he was game and he kept the course, man. He kept the course. He kept it on him.
The Greg Hardy one, we were both 100% on,
We're pretty much the same with almost everything here.
Well,
what did we get wrong?
Well,
what?
What did you say for Greg Hardy? Oh, no, Maurice Greene?
I said it was going to be round one TKO.
Oh, was it?
What was it? The second round?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. So you got one round. So wait, that's your big aha? Is that you got one round difference?
Well, maybe.
It's not that funny. Why am I laughing? All right, listen.
We both got Bryce Mitchell correct. Amazing. Correct. Great fight.
Listen, man, holy shit. And Andre Feely, man, was the toughest fight to date for him as far as with experience and just skill and whatnot. He's up there. And Feely was game. But, man, Bryce's timing on his takedown, and he can stand. It's not like he's never desperate for it. He's got a – I'm telling you, how do you not really like Bryce Mitchell?
Yeah, he is fun to watch.
He's a fun guy to watch. Hats off to Feely. He came to fight.
Yeah.
Really, I enjoyed that fight. I really did, you know? I'm a big fan. I like both guys. But, I mean, Bryce Mitchell, hats off. What a great kid.
Great.
For him. And again, we talked about Uriah Hall versus
Silva. Yeah.
And
fourth round TKO.
I think
it's hard to pick that one accurately.
Yeah, but he did. And
I mean, you took the third round TKO, which is a cute guess. All right.
So you, my little Notre Dame, listen to me. I go the other way. I'm not a hater. I'm proud of you. You got two of them on the butt.
That's right. So,
beep. You did good, Jimmy.
Three of them, because Bryce Mitchell I got on the button too.
Well, I think not that I think you were kind of copy me with that, but no. You might have picked that anyway. I think no. I said it first. I'm going to go and re-listen, but I'm not hating on you.
All right, but I would have. I got to be honest with you, Ryan Hall. I can't wait to talk to him again because I'm watching. I even texted you. I said, "What the fuck is he doing?" Because again, Silva's dangerous. I'm not saying just run in there recklessly, but you know we've watched Uriah Hall fight enough, and you know what a striker he is. And you're watching going, he's being too cautious because we're into the second round already. Like,
but why ain't people giving Israel Adesanya shit for going the distance with
him? Who?
You.
Dana. I'm not even giving Uriah shit. I'm only saying.
No, not giving him shit, but why aren't we saying, why didn't you finish him?
I'm not saying that either.
But I'm saying about like even Dana. Why didn't Israel finish
him? What I'm saying, the difference between, because the Adesanya-Anderson fight was not great. It was a little slow, but I was watching it and I remember thinking with Uriah, I'm just like, he's not pulling the trigger and there's a reason for it. I remember the Adesanya fight. They were both just kind of doing the same thing. I didn't like it as a fight as much as other fights. But with Uriah, I'm like, because we know Uriah and he's very honest about thinking about things too much sometimes. And I'm like, he's thinking about not just getting hurt, but I think, is he afraid of really hurting Anderson or embarrassing him? Or is he too much in awe of him?
Well, listen. Jimmy, there's times you've seen like when Anderson broke onto the scene with Chris Liebman where he has an insane offense.
Amazing.
Elbows, knees, Anderson Silva. Yeah. We know that.
Sure.
There's other times. More often than, I mean, even Rich Franklin too, he went after. But then there's other times when you see Anderson just that they look like the Matrix versus Forrest Griffin. Now, yeah. I know that was a long time ago. I know he's 45 years old. But this doesn't mean he wasn't out of that fight. He was still in there throwing. And it's like you have
absolutely.
That. Where you've seen something done how many times by somebody, you know they possess that. Even if it's lower, they have that ability to roll with something, come back. And so I think that will keep you hesitant enough. But at the end of the day, in a 5-round fight, he got it done in 4. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the guy's older. Would you want it done in 2? He didn't throw enough in 1 round. I understand. It didn't go though. He finished him. He finished him.
Amazing. So, yeah.
I don't know. I think that he got the job done. So
he absolutely did. But just watching it, and it's not even critical of the performance. It was like because he said that he has these thoughts in the cage. And I'm like, he's not, there's a reason he's not doing this. And is he maybe in awe of him a little more than he needs to be or doubting himself?
I was talking to Ray Longo about it. And Longo even said this. He goes, look, those were tears. Those were real tears at the end.
100%.
You know, he felt he beat up a guy. He had to, you know, he watched a 45-year-old man. He respects his oldest type of thing. He's a nice guy, Uriah.
Right. So yes. Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. I think there is that thing in there where there was a moment where it was, because he remember when he talked one time to us about, and he got into his head, he was afraid to hurt people. Like it was in his head. Because Uriah himself has said that. And I'm like, he's really into the martial arts aspect of it. And he's a really nice guy. And I'm like, is he really just scared of hurting Anderson, or is that in his head a little bit? I don't know. I'll ask him when we talk. He may go no.
Hey, man,
he
may say no. I was always afraid of hurting someone.
You are.
Fuck no. I'll punch you in the face so. Right now. Right. I'll smack you. Jimmy, I love you. Let's talk to Michael Chandler.
Looking for a new home, or you want to save on your current mortgage? Visit rate.com and you could get massive savings with Guaranteed Rate, the official mortgage partner of the UFC. Rates are at a historic lows and you could land that dream home or refinance to potentially cut your current payments in about 15 minutes. Visit rate.com today to get started with Guaranteed Rate. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval. Savings, if any, vary based on a variety of factors. Restrictions apply. Company NMLS ID number 2611. NMLS Consumer Access.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I've never met Mike. Oh,
he's a nice guy, and he's my height.
Is he?
Yes.
Well, he's a lightweight.
Well, you prick. Right. What's up?
Hey,
what's
Michael.
Up, Michael?
What's up, boys? How are we?
How
good.
You doing?
How are you?
Long time no see. Good to see you again.
I know, man. Last time I saw you, I was at your place in Huntington.
I know. When was that?
Freaking choked out.
I think you were on a Tuesday night having a good time. How long ago was that? I feel like it was a while ago.
It was years ago, man. I forget, but I was out there for a couple weeks training with Ray Janelle, and I was just going through the circuit of all the crazy workouts y'all do out there. So it was good.
Oh, it was great to see you, man. And ever since, I've been following you on Instagram. Congrats on all your success. Yep. I am so happy that you're over here now. It sounds like, but you're with the UFC, where now I can actually talk about your fucking fights. It's at my school, my friends. You know what I mean?
At the academy. It's been a long time coming, man. And I know it's and that's what I was saying. It's not like I didn't fight in the UFC because I didn't want to. It just never really worked out that way, and it worked out at the perfect time now. So let's do it, baby.
Your first premise fight, and there's so many great fights. That first premise fight where you had that injury to your ankle or your foot. Really as impressive as the win, even though you lost in the first. Just watching you on that foot try to stand and try to not be visibly injured just to draw him in was really impressive and amazing. And then you finally get up against the cage, and then it was such a weird move. The referee stops that. Were you shocked that he stopped that fight? Did you think he was calling it off, or did you know what he was doing?
Man, it was unfortunate because I think the rule is once the fight gets stopped by a referee, it's over. But it was as if there for a moment people were thinking, okay, the doctors stopped the fight, but are they going to be able to continue? And I think there was numerous people who thought, okay, he's not, it's not broken. We can move forward. And at that point, the referee had stopped the fight, but I was pleading with him and I was looking at him in his eyes, imploring with him. I'm telling you right now, it's not broken. I was just getting a beat on him. I'm going to knock him out on one foot. I'm going to karate kid him. I wish I would have went the crane. If I would have went the crane stance with one leg up, standing, and they would have caught some photos of that, man. But, it's one of those deals where it happened the way it happened. And it was, I think I gained some newfound respect around the industry because people, saw me continuing to fight. And I really would have chopped the leg off and let's keep going. I wanted to keep going. So
there's certain guys that don't have that breaking point. You have to literally shut their lights out. You're one of those guys, Michael. That's something you can't fake.
Right.
Have you seen, you were the alternate, the fight between Habib and Justin.
Yep.
Your thoughts on that?
I think it was very much different than I thought it was going to be. I thought we were going to see, Khabib doesn't have the greatest striking in the world, but he's durable. He has proven himself to be tough. He's proven himself to be hands down the most dominant control grappler on the entire planet, best in the entire world, possibly the best in the history of mixed martial arts. So I thought for sure don't go out there and get into a firefight with Justin Gaethje. Nobody wants to get in a firefight with Justin Gaethje, because you see people get into a firefight with Justin Gaethje, and then there's that point where Justin Gaethje takes a ton of damage, but then he starts to overcome his opponent because the opponent, whether it's adrenaline dump, whether it's just not being conditioned for that type of firefight, you know, Justin Gaethje usually comes on and takes guys out in those later rounds. So we saw Khabib Nurmagomedov, a consummate grappler, the best grappler in the division, the best grappler in the UFC, coming forward, plotting forward, throwing striking attacks. Even when Justin Gaethje was getting up against the black octagon line around the octagon where most guys, you know, that danger zone, he still wasn't taking shots. He was still throwing punches. He was still running at Justin Gaethje with reckless abandon. And I think it threw Justin Gaethje so far off that he kind of got into fight or flight mode, and we saw him, you know, kind of look like a deer in headlights when he did get taken down with 40 seconds left in that first round. And then second round, we saw the same exact thing. Khabib plodding forward, trudging forward, coming at him, getting into another firefight, took him down, got on top, and Justin Gaethje looked like he had never grappled before ever. And I don't say that in a disrespectful way. I think we've all been there. You know, Matt, you've been there where you get into a spot in a fight where you're like, you're not quite reacting the way that you trained because you're just, you know, the circumstances overcome your ability to navigate and negotiate these different positions. And he looked like amazing out there and went out there and caught him with that triangle and it was over.
I thought that same thing when Alvarez fought Connor in the Garden. I was at that fight and watching that, because Eddie was such a ferocious fighter. And I'm like, in his face, it seemed like the moment was bigger than he expected it to be. And it might have caught him a little bit, because I think Eddie's a much better fighter than he was in that fight.
Yeah. And I think that was the interesting aspect of it too. As soon as the fight was over, my first thought was, man, because I will tell you guys this, I have a ton of respect for Khabib, but I thought Gaethje might have had his night that night. I thought it might have been the one time where we might have saw Khabib really his chin get tested and Justin Gaethje shocked the world. I really had that feeling. So then my first thought was I was a little bit let down. Not that I wanted Khabib to lose, but I just thought there was going to be, as a fan, I took my, you know, took my competitor hat off, put the fan hat on and said, man, I thought we were going to see a more competitive fight between Justin Gaethje and him. And I thought we were going to see a better performance out of Gaethje. Once again, this is also armchair quarterback, Monday morning quarterback saying, hey, I've not stopped and stepped into the cage with the man that is Khabib. So it was an interesting feeling. It was an interesting night, to say the least. But to be there cage side and watch it as my first UFC event as a UFC fighter, it was a night that I'm not going to forget anytime soon.
You know, I was expecting more scrambles. Like when I watch from his wrestling background, and you weren't alone in that thought, thinking that this might be Justin's fight because of his wrestling background, and even the lead up, you're hearing, oh, folk style versus Dagestani freestyle. Yeah. You know, Khabib's wrestling, and it's making you amped up. Like, could he not only take him down, but keep him down? And then I you know, what really stands out with you in my mind, and I love this. I was telling Jimmy earlier, I love it on your Instagram. I see a lot of it, is your scrambles in some of your practices. In fights also, of course. But in these scrambles, man, you think you got your ass down, you're doing cartwheel. I love it. It's so much fun. I watch it a lot. I'm telling you, Jimmy, you got to look at his Instagram. Yeah. They're all over. And you're going with bigger guys, they got you down. And because I got little legs too, so it reminds me of like when I was a little younger. So you're just always getting up and you look like they're going to complete the takedown. And then you're doing some funky shit. You're ended up on their back and all over. It's so cool. But I was expecting more scramble, that type of scrambles for Justin to make that. And I was kind of shocked when he was on his back, how he looked. He wasn't reacting. No matter how tired you are, he just wasn't reacting the right way off his back at all.
And it's like you're saying, to your point, it's almost, you know, like we were talking about Eddie Alvarez just a second ago against Conor. There's these moments that, you know, maybe it's the circumstance, or maybe it's just meant to be. That's how the fight was going to be. Or maybe, you know, you can't take anything away from Khabib being the dominant man that he is, also putting Gaethje into that position. But also, I'm with you. I looked at it and I thought, Justin is better than that. You know, I know we haven't seen Justin do a lot of grappling in his fights, but I was in the same weight class as him, the same NCAA Division I wrestling bracket, 2009. And I watched his wrestling matches. The dude he wasn't easy to take down. He continued to wrestle. And I think that's what wrestlers do. That's what we call a chain wrestling, you know, and some of the best mixed martial artists and even jiu-jitsu players are guys who started out as wrestling, because we're always thinking about the next move and we're always thinking about, okay, if I need to pick this guy up and put him down 7 times to make him quit and make him settle into this position that I'm trying to get him in, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to continue in that course of action until I either get into dominant position, I win the position, or he just gets so dead tired that we can transition to a new position, you know. And that's kind of my mindset when it comes to wrestling. That's why I always, you know, usually when I do these wrestling posts, it's I always just say a simple two letter sentence: keep wrestling, period. That's it. You just keep wrestling until we get to a position that my will has been imposed, or you are so dead tired and I've made you second guess yourself so much that you say, okay, forget it. I'll start playing off my back, or I'll figure it out. I'll just play off hurdle, so I can get to a dominant position, then do damage, and then look for submission after that. But I think it'd be an honor to step in the cage with Khabib. See if I can be the guy who could stop him. It remains to be seen. 29 have said they were going to. 29 have failed. So I'm not going to sit here and say it'd be an easy day at the park. And he's a living legend, man. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future.
Realistically, what do you think it would be a starting place for you? Because Khabib is probably going to take some time off, I'm guessing, especially after how emotional he was, and if he even fights again. What do you think is a place that you'll start? Or a level that you start at, because you're coming in as such a, you know, a highly rated fighter. So, you know, it was like Ben Askren did, or like Justin even came in as a very respected guy. So where do you think you would start realistically? What type of a matchup do you think they'd give you?
You know, I think if we do look at the past as a predictor of the future or the present right now, you look at Ben Askren, he drew Robbie Lawler right away. High profile fight, top 5, top 6 guy. You look at Justin Gaethje coming over a couple of years ago, coming over from World Series of Fighting, which, no shade towards them at the time or his track record, but my resume, some of the fights and the wins that I do have, and Bellator as an organization, I think is a step above where Justin Gaethje came from. And he also drew a top 5 guy right away in Michael Johnson. So, I mean, I don't think I'm being entitled by coming in and saying I would like a top 5 guy right away. Because as we said, the past being a predictor of the present circumstances, I would love, like I said, before UFC 254, I said, hey, Conor and Khabib Khabib and Gaethje are booked fighting October 24th. Conor and Poirier look like they're almost across the finish line for their next fight. That leaves Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson needs a dance partner. He had already turned the fight down against me originally, which I don't fault him for. I was the new guy and he had his reasons for saying no. So that Tony Ferguson fight. But then after Khabib's retirement speech, like we said, we still don't know what's going to happen next. You got Gaethje, who's saying he's ready to fight in 6 or 8 weeks. That puts him available for, you know, December, January. I said, hey, I'll fight November for the title. If y'all want to do a title, if you want to do the title in December, I'll fight then. I think the UFC has now pumped the brakes and said, hey, I don't think Khabib is actually going to retire, so we'll find out. But Tony Ferguson would be, you know, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje would be number one, number two. Thoughts right now of guys I want to fight. I think it's a great introductory fight to the UFC fans of who Michael Chandler is. They're both great fights. They're both guys who fight, as you guys have seen, who watch my fights, guys who run away. That's the best way to try to beat me, is run away from my pressure. Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson is going to meet me in the middle of that octagon, and we're going to have a blast. So either of those guys sounds like a great fight.
If Khabib isn't 100% sure, or if he's semi-retired, UFC has never shied away from interim belts either. I mean, like, you know, that's what Justin did when he beat Tony, was for the interim belt. So there's definitely a shot at some type of a title matchup, not knowing what Khabib is going to do.
Yeah, and that's a possibility too. And that's the UFC too, to make their decision. Let's be honest, guys. I share a same weight class as the biggest name in combat sports, the most polarizing figure we may ever see. His name is Conor McGregor. And so if Conor McGregor is in the weight class, there needs to be an interim belt. Chances are he could be fighting for it, and I don't fault the UFC for that. So I realize I'm a new guy, the lowest guy on the pecking order. I just want to come in and earn it, you know?
Well, I mean, shit, you more than deserve a top 5 opponent, man. How many UFC champions have you beat? You beat Eddie Alvarez. You beat Ben Henderson, right? Yep. 2 or more?
Yep.
I mean, how many 2's enough? 1's enough. Yeah. You know what I mean? These guys are studs. It's not like you got them in their later years. I mean, shit.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, I'm so happy you're here, because it'll be a shame for you to go your career and not getting the acknowledgement, because people know you. You're already known from that last organization, I'm like, you're Bellator. I don't see it. They don't want to get it. My company kissed the SIM. But people already know you from there. And not a lot of guys are really known from there as much as the UFC. So I'm so happy that you're here. And when I'm just thinking of the top five guys, I can't see you in a boring fight. I never seen you in a boring fight. So yeah. Now that you're in this over here, the top five, every match is insane. Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, shit, anybody.
It's pretty exciting. And I think that's what it is too, Matt. I mean, obviously, you know, you and I have spoken, like, you know, I'm in this sport and there's a business component, but there's also the competitor component. And I've won multiple world titles outside the UFC, but was I going to be content the rest of my life, never stepping into that UFC octagon? And I wavered on it. I'll be completely honest with you, because I got my wife and my son, who are the highlight of my life, the most important thing in my life. And they were the reason that I fight, taking care of them. But there's the competitor in me that says, yeah, but are you going to be okay? You know, I always just thought, like, and I use it as a metaphor. I thought my pillow was going to turn into a cinder block that I was laying on every single night, trying to get a good night's sleep, knowing that I never tested myself against the UFC guys in that UFC octagon. And as I said, it's not just enough to become a UFC fighter. I said that on the broadcast. I didn't just come here to put the UFC gloves on and wear the UFC fight kit and be a part of the cool kid crowd, right? I want to step into that octagon. I want to put on a great show. I want to prove to the fans who I am. And man, I think it's the right time. It's a perfect time. I feel better now than I ever have been, coming off probably the best performance of my life back in August. Getting the opportunity at UFC 254, just showing up. I mean, yeah, I made weight and people were making fun of me for showing up and making weight, and leaving. And I'm just a fitness model because people, you know, we were posting pictures of me taking photos on the beach, but had to create some more content with the UFC. But so I took some guff for it, but I was the guy who showed up, stepped up. I said three S's. Dana said, hey, would you fight October 24th? I said, yes. They said, okay, what about Poirier Ferguson? I said, yes. Neither of those guys turned it down. And then they said, hey, would you be the backup? And I said, yes. So by no means am I a yes man. I'm going to stand up for myself, but I also realize I need to come in, say yes right away when other people will say no, because life is all about taking opportunities. And I took this opportunity and now we're, you know, I believe it's going to pay off and I'm going to be UFC champion in the next 8 to 10 months.
How did exactly it happen? Was your other contract just up, or was it one of those things where you had kind of been like, if they don't do the right thing, I'm going to go to the UFC? Or was your intent like, you know what, I really think I want to go to the UFC? Was it something that they didn't blow it? UFC is just where you want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, and I have no problem saying this. I had a phenomenal run with Bellator and fighting outside the UFC, and made some great relationships and had some great fights, a lot of ups, a couple downs, but I always wanted to be in the UFC. There's no secret. You can't. I will say there was times when people were like, "Hey, man, are you ever going to make it to the UFC? You know, is your goal to make it to the UFC?" And of course, there's those moments where I'm like, well, I'm making some really good decisions outside of fighting in the UFC. It's a business. You got to provide for the family. You got to take the right opportunity at the right time. So, but let's be honest, it is making it to the UFC. That's the goal for a lot of people, to make it to the UFC. It's the ultimate proving grounds in mixed martial arts. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that was apparent when I was on Fight Island, realizing the well-oiled machine that the UFC is, the high-performing individuals that the UFC has on staff. I'm like, this blows everything else out of the water. It's the big league for sure. But we had a 2-week negotiation period right after my contract ended. But I think a couple months before that, I had already made my decision that the door was going to be closed, not necessarily closed on Bellator, but at least closed to re-signing a new deal with Bellator and at least going to test free agency. I needed to at least for myself to be like, hey, let me at least take an offer from the UFC. Let me sit across the table from Dana White and see what we come up with. And I'll tell you guys, I was pleasantly surprised when it came to me feeling at home. As soon as I sat down with Hunter Campbell and I had that phone call with Dana, I felt like I made the right decision. I'm home. I'm right where I need to be at the exact right time. So as soon as that exclusive negotiation period was up, I was in Vegas a couple of days later, meetings, phone calls. And then a couple of days after that, I knew 100% for sure that I was going to be signed with the UFC. A couple of days after that, Dana White announces it on SportsCenter, and the rest is history.
Were they mad at you? The old guys you worked with, were they like, did you get any calls going, dude, we were like family, or it, you know, no?
No, I will say no, it didn't. And I made a phone call because I'm a guy, like, it doesn't matter, man. I'm going to come up, I'm going to come to the UFC, I'm going to win the world title. I'm going to be doing all kinds of awesome stuff with my new family, my new bosses, my new colleagues, my new coworkers, and I'm going to create great relationships in the UFC. But I always had a great relationship with Bellator, with Scott Coker and Rich Chu and Mike Kogan and these guys, the guy, the brass at Bellator. And that's what you want to do. You want to be a good employee. Things always work out well for the person who is a good employee. So I made some phone calls and I told them, I made them aware of what I wanted to do, what my heart said. My heart said, I want to take this UFC off. And it's not because of lack of anything with Bellator. It's just that I want to fight for the UFC. I want to fight in that UFC octagon. I want to fight these guys. And I want to put myself in a position to sink or swim. And I wanted that. And they were, you know, obviously they were very, of course they wanted to keep me, but also there's a business side of a business component of it. Could they afford to keep me? So it was, it worked out really well. And here we are, man. I'm excited about what we're doing moving forward.
Yeah. So hopefully the UFC is really good and better than probably any sports organization I've ever seen at getting fans fights that fans want to see. Like they really do make it happen. Like, you know, sometimes it takes a little finagling, but normally they don't make the mistake that boxing has historically made for the last 50 years. So hopefully you have something before the end of the year. Because I know where everyone's looking forward. I didn't want to see Khabib or Justin drop out, but I wanted to see you possibly get a fight before November. That didn't happen. So hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah. Because originally I will say, like, I wanted a little bit of time after this October 24th card because I've essentially made weight three times in the last 10 months. When I've been in training camp since March, you know, March, the pandemic hit. I went down to Florida in April, essentially, because I thought I was going to fight in June, and then June got pushed back to July, and then it got pushed back to August. I was down in training camp for 13 weeks down in Florida. Then I came home. I went on a 1 week vacation with kind of the family and whatnot. And then before I knew it, a week later, I'm in Vegas about to sign a UFC deal. 2 days after that, I throw everything in my vehicle, drive back down to Florida for this October 24th date. So I've been in training camp, you know, 80% of 2020. Body needed a little bit of rest, just to be home, eat a little bit of food, have an adult beverage, spend some time with my wife, you know, like build my body back up, hit the weights, get a little bit bigger because I've been shrinking as I've just constantly been training and been in training camp, right? So body feels great after now a week of being off a little bit. And then, we'll keep getting after it. And maybe, I mean, I told Dana that night, October 24th, anytime, any place, anywhere, if you want to get this new belt around someone's waist in November, I'm in. December, I'm in. But, you know, there's also, it looks like Connor and Poirier are fighting in January, allegedly. Who knows? That one's not done yet. But so that's a possibility. So
I don't, only because I see you training like a maniac, the best recovery, Epsom salt baths, or do you do like the ice tubs? Do you go in the Cairo, what do you call those things?
Cryotherapy.
Don't make fun of me, Jimmy.
No, it's okay. I wouldn't have remembered if you didn't say
again?
It. Cryotherapy.
Yeah.
Cryo, yeah.
That's what you do? What do
no,
you
do? I actually don't do it much. But no, I mean, really just for recovery, from a recovery standpoint, I just make sure I do my self mobility tools, rollers. So I use a roller, a hard roller. I use my Stowrite, which is that tool to use for your psoas, you use it for your low back, your glutes, your hamstrings, like everything. I hit my whole body with a Stowrite, a roller, and I make sure I get body work every single day. I have a great body work guy here in Nashville who works on me once a week for sure. A guy down in Florida where I'm in training camp there at least once a week, maybe twice a week, just to make sure they're moving the myofascia, we're moving, you know, breaking up all the scar tissue, breaking up all the little knots and then little nooks and crannies. And then I'm huge on branched chain amino acids and a lean protein and anti-inflammatory and antioxidants. And that usually makes me feel like that's what keeps me feeling like I'm 20 years old.
What's anti-inflammatory? You say that the last part, anti-inflammatory. And do you take pills for that?
Yeah, anti-inflammatory, antioxidants. So like your ginger, turmeric, resveratrol, fish oils, essentially just crushing all the free radicals and inflammation. Your biggest detriment and the biggest enemy in everyone's body is inflammation, whether it's inflammation from overwork, inflammation from the foods we eat, gluten, inflammation from the things we're ingesting, the environmental toxins, all that kind of stuff. I'm not like in the weeds about it crazy like some people are, but like I do realize like the world that we live in, we are ingesting things that our bodies were not meant to metabolize. So getting as much out of that and flushed out of your system as possible.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had a bad right, like, and again, I don't fight or anything. I'm just a fucking idiot, and I stepped in a hole and hurt my leg. And I had a numbness in my right leg for years, on and off. It was some kind of a nerve. I saw a massage therapist like 2 months ago, and he dug into like where my hip. He changed my life. Like I still have to keep doing it. But somebody who massages you like and hits the pressure point right, that's like really messing you up. It's like my life for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I'm like, I can't believe I can walk on this and not feel it.
That's yeah. And that's the crazy. I mean, and probably the same thing with you, Matt, all those years of just getting cranked up and crushed up, and you're kind of walking around all cockeyed, swirled up. It's like crazy, man.
My knees are shot, bro. They suck. I got that bad arthritis in my knees. I walk like a lemon. My kids are calling me a zombie. They hear me walking downstairs. My little girl's going, zombie. Really? Former champion. Call me a zombie?
I tell you, yeah, exactly. No, I mean, that's the thing, too. I will say, not to go like crazy down the, you know, massage therapy, you know, route, but like realizing that you have, it's on you. The accountability is on you to unlock your body and continue to turn back the hands of time as much as you possibly can. If you got a little knot, you got to get rid of it. Because before you know it, that knot seizes up your shoulder, and then your shoulder start seizing up your neck, and you start walking around weird, and then it takes 6 months for someone to dig it out, you know. But that has always worked out extremely well for me. As long as I feel better in the trenches of training camp. Most people say, oh man, I'm 6 weeks into my training camp. I'm a couple weeks away from my fight. My body hurts so bad. My body feels the best when I'm 6 weeks into training camp because I know I've been diligent. I wake up every morning, I hit my so right. Then I hit my roller and my so right before practice, number one. Practice, mobilize my body, sweat like crazy, move around, and then between practices I rest. Before my second workout, I hit my roller and my so right again. Then I hit my so right again, more of a cool down, almost meditation, visualization, 10, 20 minutes before I go to bed at night. And that's just kind of my mobility routine, where there's something pushing, prodding, and grinding in these different areas of my body, just like you were saying with your hip, to make yourself just feel great. You know,
you said so right. I know the roller. Yeah. What is the so right again?
It's so the so. Oh, you know what it is, Jim?
What's it called? I'm sorry.
So right. So it starts with a P. PSO-right. So essentially, this is the thing. And let's be honest. Like, what 90% of people that you come into contact with say they have low back pain. It's similar to you, Matt. Like being hunched over and bent over in a jiu-jitsu stance, and or for me, it was a wrestling stance. I was a right leg lead, so that means my hips were cocked this way. My right leg was in front. My left leg was in back. The psoas muscle is a muscle that connects to the middle of your back and goes down to your pelvis, and it basically controls your hips. It's like your hip flexor muscle, but it's a big, thick band muscle if you Google it. And I had a messed up right psoas muscle. So it was twisting my hips. My butt was sticking out. My chest was puffed up. So I kind of had walked like that wrestler. And I realized you get on this thing that kind of has these two peaks in it, and it goes right into your stomach, punches through and gets your psoas muscle, and it helps you just lengthen everything, and you're able to stand up. I actually just posted a video of it on my Instagram today, so go like check it out today. But it's like, for me, it's worked out. It's worked, done wonders. I found it when it was in a prototype phase. It was a really, really crappy 3D printed hard plastic one. And since then, the company has like spent $1 million in research and development. Just check it out. I'll send you guys some. I'll get your information and I'll get some sent out to you. I'm telling you right now, you're gonna love it. It's gonna be painful, but with the pain, you're gonna be unlocking the body. It's great.
I'm unlocking that. I'm doing it.
You're gonna lock it, baby. You'll be walking a little bit less like a zombie. So your daughter will.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Sick of getting heckled.
And if you have any if you have any ins for Cialis, let me know.
I don't, but maybe John Jones does. I think John Jones. We'll have to reach out to John Jones.
Oh, I know. I've talked to John about it. Yeah, it's great, but we shared a pill.
Oh, God.
All right, Michael. Well, listen, man, really, we're happy you're in the UFC, and you know, everybody likes you, and hopefully you fight as soon as possible, because obviously you're very likable guy and such a ferocious fighter. So I hope we see you really soon, man.
Besides that, even commentary, man, you're so well spoken. You know your stuff. Good, Mike.
I mean, thank you. I'd like to do that as well. I mean, I've been blessed you know, with a really, really great opportunity, man. And I'm just excited to take it all head on. I mean, this is an honor, man. I watch you guys and listen to you guys' podcast. Hilarious, fun. So it's an honor to be a part of this. And yeah, man, I can't wait to step into that octagon and put on a show for the people who have been following me since day one when I was a nobody. And then, you know, now even the new people who, you know, who think I'm unproven, which is completely fine. I'm excited to come in and earn it. You know, I've always been a guy who just wants to come in and earn it. So I appreciate you guys for having me.
We'll definitely talk to you again, man. And, you know, hopefully have a fight lined up soon, Michael. Take care. It was good talking to you. Really good talking to you.
Yes, thanks, sir. Michael. Appreciate you guys. Thanks, guys.
Hey, man, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm happy to have you. Listen, he's such
I like him a lot.
He's a likable guy.
Yeah.
Family dude. And he's a killer.
He's a killer.
Hard worker.
Yeah.
Hard worker. Trains his ass. So if dangerous as they come. I'm excited to have him
on
the UFC.
Me too, know? Man. Me too.
And I'll tell you right now, man, he could scramble. But I'm so happy. I'm using Mopo a lot today. What's that about?
That's all right. You're a nice guy. You're trying not to curse. It's a family-friendly podcast.
Jimmy, I had my ear clogged up like a mofo. I had to go to the ENT this morning. And she put a needle in my, it looked like a needle. She looked in there. She's like, oh, you got all, because I've been getting like, I was over in Abu Dhabi. And
she looked in your ear. What did she see? Did she see the poster on the wall on the other side?
You mean, you call me a big dummy?
No. I didn't mean that.
No, she didn't see through you. She listened. She threw a bunch of book in there and wax.
Oh.
She stuck this thing in there and sucked it out like a vacuum.
Is it a cone? Or they do that?
It looked like a needle, but it wasn't. It was like a little bit bigger than a needle. She's like, you have to be very careful with this.
Yeah.
Because it could rupture the eardrum. So I'm just sitting there. And she's
like, you could see the difference. Like, she took a lot of shit out.
I didn't see anything. I guess it just sucks it out. And it's so little. It's a little thing that you didn't see get filled up or anything. I don't know where the fuck the shit went.
Right.
But it goes in there through somewhere. I don't know. But it was. She stuck that thing in, and it felt like she's vacuum cleaning out my ear.
Tickles, right?
Jimmy, now I literally could hear again. I couldn't hear out of my right ear. All right, everybody. I'm sure you wanted to know about that.
No, it was fine. Hey, look, I mean, all that stuff, like listening to Michael talk about muscles and like the roller, like all that stuff helps people, man. Right. You know, like getting yourself a little fixed up as you hit fucking over 40, get your shit fixed up. It's good. All right. Thank you, Kevin Holland and Michael Chandler. Great show. Both great guests. And we'll talk in a couple days.
Jimmy, I can't wait to talk to you. Thank you, everybody.
All right,
bye, Jimmy.
See you, pal.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.